League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
The following podcast is brought to you by BetDSI.com. The NFL and college seasons are heating up, so what are you doing on the sidelines? Get in the game with BetDSI. They've been paying winners for 20 years now, and with a reputation for great service and fast payouts, it's easy to know why BetDSI is the place to play, win, and get paid. Anytime, anywhere. BetDSI has every wager you could ever imagine, whether it's the NFL, college football, Major League Baseball, the NBA, UFC, esports, global sports. I mean, if it's happening, BetDSI is putting a line on it. You can even bet on politics and celebrities. Plus, you can bet live with BetDSI's live betting option. So stop hanging out on the sidelines and get started with BetDSI. You'll get some extra bang for your buck right now, too. BetDSI is offering you podcast listeners an extra 25% bonus, but only when you use the promo code WIN125. Don't leave your money on the table. Use promo code WIN125 and get the special podcast listener 125% bonus. Just visit BetDSI.com. That's BetDSI.com and use promo code WIN125. Don't stand on the sidelines. To win it, you have to be in it. Visit BetDSI.com right now. That's BetDSI.com. Promo code WIN125.
This is the Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio.
And online at SBNationLive.com.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston, here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
So you have been long a believer in Brock Osweiler, right? Brock Osweiler, former
Brock
Texas
quarterback.
Brock on. Brock on with him.
Now, Brock star.
Did you watch the Brock star yesterday?
Hey, he has a winning record right now.
He's back. He's really back.
He's back for one game, yeah.
Oh, come on.
Oh, my gosh. That is too funny.
He actually threw the ball well. I think he threw for something like 360 yards. I mean, this is a guy who came back from the dead, literally.
He keeps coming back from the dead. He's the guy with, he's a cat with nine lives. That's what he is.
Well, on the field tonight, the Packers are leading the 49ers 17-14. We are just early into the second quarter, so lots of football to play there. Lots of scoring already in that one.
Yeah, it's going to be, I love this little shootout we got going here.
Well, Aaron Rodgers, you expect to see do that well. C.J. Beathard has lit up the 49ers for 14 points. So it is fun to see him perform well on a team that's lost Jimmy Garoppolo and seems to have lost their way. But here come the Packers. They've got the ball, and they've just crossed midfield. They're trying to put some more points on that lead of 17-14.
I think we do have to note, since you brought up Brock Osweiler.
Yes.
Dear Brock Osweiler.
Brock,
he had a little
on.
Help from, you know, a veteran in running back Frank Gore, who had 101 yards yesterday on 15 carries.
Yeah.
Nothing, that helps the Brock man.
I mean, look, there was when Brock Osweiler played well, and there were at least two or three games.
He has flashes.
Yeah, he had flashes. He did so when he had a good running game. And you can take that back to when he was with the Broncos. Recall, they were running the ball pretty well, and they did that sort of stretch offense, and he filled in very well when Peyton Manning was injured that season. There were even questions that maybe you don't bring Peyton back in that Super Bowl run because Brock was playing at such a high level in that little window. They brought Peyton back. Peyton went on to win the Super Bowl. And, of course, Brock left town and found his way to Houston.
And it's been going downhill ever since. A little stop in Cleveland. But, you know, also Chicago told me that Trubisky's not quite, he's not there yet.
Hard to find
Work
your franchise quarterback.
Yeah,
well, two
is.
Teams that do have franchise quarterbacks, the Patriots and the Chiefs, they were the Sunday night game. We'll look at Mahomes and Brady and the fire out, the big matchup last night when we return on SB Nation Radio.
This is the Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston, here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
Carl, I don't know that you know this, but one out of four batteries will fail this winter. Get yours tested for free during Superstart Battery Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts. If it needs to be replaced, O'Reilly has the Superstart battery for you. O'Reilly Auto Parts, better prices, better parts every day.
Thank you for that hot tip.
All right, now there you have it. Now, it's probably a good window to be a Boston sports fan. At least it was last night.
Oh, my goodness.
I mean, the Red Sox were playing at Fenway and going on to victory, tying this series there, the ALCS, 1-1 with the Astros. And then there was this incredible shootout on Sunday Night Football.
Gillette Stadium.
Mahomes versus Brady at Gillette Stadium. Really an amazing Sunday night in Boston.
That was a great game. You saw the up-and-coming in the NFL, and you saw the not going out anytime soon, but definitely Brady at the end of his, towards the end of his career.
Sure, he's in the last 15% of his career,
absolutely.
And Mahomes certainly in the first 15%.
So it was neat to see that. To me, that was a bit of a passing of the torch.
Yep.
And also to see that you look at the parallel between Belichick and Brady. Obviously, Belichick was the perfect coach for Tom Brady, and he put the perfect pieces around him. Same situation for Mahomes in Kansas City with Andy Reid. He's got these incredible pieces around him with Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce. And, I mean, it's hard to fail with all of that. So both of these quarterbacks were drafted into great situations.
Yep, they were indeed. I was impressed by Mahomes and his ability to bring the Chiefs back. I mean, they were down by 15 points. And facing the Patriots on the road in that environment to bring them back was very impressive. I heard a stat that basically a rookie quarterback, and that's what Mahomes is, rookie quarterbacks don't win against Belichick at Gillette Stadium. And Mahomes did not win, but he surely played well.
He did. And you know what? Kansas City is for real. I've got to say, I think they are the real deal.
Well, we talked about great wide receivers. Certainly Adam Thielen of the Vikings deserves a lot of attention now. But Tyreek Hill is electric. I mean, you see him catch the ball, and he just runs by everybody.
Yeah, he also got a little beer in his face, too, from real super classy Patriots fans. But do you know what? Love this. The Patriots fans figured out who this guy was, found him out, and he's banned from the stadium, and they turned him over to law enforcement. That was
really
so classless.
Yeah, and it came out a couple hours ago. The police have found him and have already presented him with some charges. So
excellent.
So that was pretty quick. Pretty quick.
Well, of course,
I like that. Good.
And the other night, Craig Kimbrell coming out of the bullpen at Yankee Stadium, somebody tossed beer down at him. I mean, you have to protect these guys. They're out on a field. And the way the stadiums are built, for obvious reasons, they're built vertically, right? All the fans want to be almost on top of the action. But you've got to protect the players.
And that was that fourth quarter 75-yard catch and run touchdown when he – you know, got the momentum through the end zone and went into the wall. And that's what he was greeted with, a lot of middle fingers, which, you know, whatever, you expect that. But then the beer in the face was just pretty classless. So give it to the Patriots for taking control of that one. But I really do think Kansas City is exciting. They're real. They're here to stay.
It's strange to look this far ahead, but those two seem like the class of the AFC. And if you had to make a prediction today, they will meet in the AFC Championship game.
You know, I agree with you. Looking at those defenses, who do you think has, because both of them, that would be their weakness, is their defense.
Right.
Whose did you think looked better last night?
Well, I don't know that either one of them looked good.
When you have a 43-40 game?
Yeah, 43-40 game. No, neither one of those teams have great defenses. I guess if it came down to just the defenses, I would lean a bit toward the Patriots with Belichick because I feel like he schemes that defense. He always gets just the most out of the talent he has on the field.
Fair answer.
But we'll see. The other thing that I think is really promising for the Patriots is they really are developing a nice running game. I mean, I didn't think that they should take Sonny Michel in the first round.
Oh, I love Sonny Michel.
But he has really played well. They're giving the ball a lot now, and he is an integral part of that offense. They found a way to work him in.
Yeah, he had a great game last night. Great gaming. And Kansas City's got Kareem Hunt. So there's great weapons on both teams. And Josh Gordon had a great night last night for the Patriots.
Worth mentioning, I mean, Josh Gordon was a bit of a flyer. Patriots brought him in. Obviously, Gordon had run his course with the Browns, all kinds of off-the-field issues. But it looks like, well, one thing that has happened is that Brady has taken Gordon under his wing. They put Gordon next to Brady in the locker room. And Brady is really working on him. I think they're building some trust.
I think this is his last chance saloon, so I think it's going to work out well for him there. He's a real talent.
One team that probably could have used Josh Gordon is the Dallas Cowboys, because their wide receiving core is not that notable, but it was notable yesterday.
Cole Beasley was
a stud, and the Cowboys offense finally lit it up. The party line out of Dallas over the first five games was that the receiving core, Dak Prescott, the whole of that offense was better than they were showing. That it wasn't that any one of those things was bad. It was just that they hadn't come into sync yet. I mean, a lot of new faces. And that once they started the click, they could really execute. And perhaps we saw that yesterday. I mean, it was against the Jaguars defense that came in, at least, with a pretty good reputation.
I think, right. I totally agree with you. And it's the second straight, you know, that Dallas' success was also helped by Bortles' second straight disastrous outing.
Right.
You know, that helps too. But it is amazing what the Cowboys were able to do with basically number three and four receivers. They looked fantastic.
Well, and Tavon Austin is an athletic guy. He'd like to be the Cowboys version of a Tyreek Hill. He's never played at that level by any means, but he does have that kind of speed. Unfortunately, he got a groin injury, left the game, and is doubtful for next week. So they're going to lose.
That's a big loss.
They're going to lose that. And they have a big matchup next week against the Redskins for the division lead. So to lose Tavon Austin, a setback. Beasley lit it up. They're starting to work Jeff Schwaim, the tight end, into that offense. Of course, it all starts with the running game. Once the defenses are keying on Elliott, the play-action passes do set up some plays.
The question I have for you, David, would be, is there enough talent on this Dallas offense to be consistent on a weekly basis? I mean, as consistent as it can be in the NFL.
I'm actually worried about Dak Prescott. I mean, he was able to move the ball because when he needed to, he ran the ball. And I just don't think you can run the ball as often as he did and be a prolific offense. I mean, look at all the best offenses through the last 3 to 5 years. They don't run their quarterbacks as many times as Dak Prescott ran yesterday. And he ran it in part because I think, well, yes, they ran the RPO plays, and those are effective, and that's a designed choice. But sometimes it's because he's either not seeing somebody open or they're not getting open, and so he has no other choice but to scramble and make something with his feet. And he did it very effectively. I'm not dismissing what he did, but that doesn't really project for prolific offense.
You think the OC stays?
Well, it's funny, the overreactions that happen week
right,
to week
of course.
To week. Linehan was really taking a lot of bullets over the last the first five games. Yesterday he's a hero and they were saluting his creativity. I don't think he's going to get fired this year, but there have certainly been whispers that perhaps the Cowboys need to expand the playbook, try different things, and be a bit more creative. He was more creative last week, or Sunday. He ran some plays that they hadn't run before. They did some things out of the RPO that were interesting and really showed some flexibility. I know, I think Linehan's there. I think in a league where you get criticized quickly, he took some arrows, but no, he's there. I actually think the guy who's more at risk and or the primary risk is Jason Garrett. If the Cowboys don't finish out strong, look, they're 3-3. If they finish with a losing record, I think Garrett's job is in jeopardy, and then Linehan would be a fallout of that decision. The one thing I would say about this Cowboys team that I don't think has been emphasized enough is that that defense is playing really, really well. It's the best Cowboys defense they've had in perhaps 5 years. The linebacker play with Jalen Smith and Leighton Vander Esch has been outstanding.
Wow.
They are getting some pass rush from, well, of course, DeMarcus Lawrence. Randy Gregory put some pressure on, but the other neat addition yesterday was David Irving has come back. He was suspended. He's now on that defensive front. He played tackle, and he put pressure on Bortles as well. So the defense is really taking their play to another level. In fact, the better defense on the field yesterday looked like the Cowboys versus the Jaguars. Of course, you have the Bortles factor that's sort of hard to assess.
That helps, too.
I am going to call you out because, you know, a few weeks
ago, we
gave you a little credit because you predicted after Bortles had that great game against the Patriots that he would fall from his mountaintop. And you said he was a week-on, week-off kind of guy. And he seemed to be, because after a great Patriots game, he played miserably the next week. But you were wrong in one dimension. It's not that he's week on, week off. He's been week off, week off, week off. Now he's really come. He can't win consistently.
Doug Marrone really wants me to be right.
Yes, he does. Because 50-50, and with that defense, it's tipping point. They'd have a winning season.
Right.
But he's no. I mean, it feels like he's hit a new low. And you know, we talked about it in the offseason that really, why do the Jaguars, with all the other elements, a great defense, a great running game, and a great running back in Leonard Fournette.
Why re-sign him?
Why did they re-sign him? Why didn't they go out and get Kirk Cousins? Why didn't they? Well, look at the Vikings. They let Keenum walk, and they brought in Cousins because they wanted to get really aggressive at the quarterback position. If the Vikings would do that after Keenum's success, why wouldn't the Jaguars have done the same with Blake Bortles?
That's a question they'll be asking themselves over and over and over again. But the defenses now are wise to Bortles' throw on first down tendency. Like, it's easy. They got it.
Well, when we come back, we're going to get a chance to visit with Gary Myers, and he is the author of a book, How About Them Cowboys? We'll ask Gary Myers whether the Cowboys can return to the Super Bowl with Jerry Jones running the ship. When we come back, Gary Myers here on SB Nation Radio.
This is The Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio, live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston. Here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
Well, now joining us on the Bet DSI guest line is Gary Myers. The Bet DSI guest line is where you can enter promo code WIN125 and get in on the action and get paid. It's the Bet DSI guest line. And joining us on that guest line is Gary Myers. He has covered the NFL since 1978. He's a Pro Football Hall of Fame voter. He's authored 4 books, and his latest book has just come out. It's called How About Them Cowboys? Gary, welcome into the show.
Hi, how are you doing tonight?
Really appreciate you joining us. I'm holding your book in my hand. It's How About Them Cowboys? I'm a big-time Cowboys fan. Carla's sitting next to me. Well, maybe. But she's read the book as well.
I do. I love the book. Thank you, Gary.
It's a good.
Thank you.
It's a good book for both fans of the Cowboys and haters of the Cowboys. But let's go back. I would love to sort of get you to unpack a few things that came out of this book. One was a secret meeting between Tom Landry and Jerry Jones. Tell us that story.
Yeah, I mean, after Jerry bought the team in 1989, his relationship with Landry was non-existent. Because he, you know, as you all know, he fired him.
Yep.
Right as he was buying the team, and starting the next year in 1990, he was trying to get him to agree to be inducted into the Cowboys Ring of Honor, and Tom kept saying no, and Jerry didn't want to induct anybody else until he was able to convince Landry to go in. So, in 1993, Jerry was really pushing and getting nowhere, and they had a mutual friend. Who is the president of the Dallas in the Dallas market of a big supermarket chain? And this guy, Bill Parker, set up a meeting at his house between Landry and Jerry. And the end result was they had lunch together for 2 hours, and Tom agreed to be inducted into the Hall of Fame, into the Ring of Honor. During that 93 season. And so when Jerry told me the story, I said, I've never heard this before. He goes, the only people that knew about it were his family. So to me, that was a pretty big deal because getting Landry in the Ring of Honor meant an awful lot to the Cowboy fans, and nobody really knew how Jerry was finally able to convince him. And that's the story.
Do you think that the game had sort of passed Coach Landry by, that it was time for Landry to retire, and Jerry Jones was just the guy who came in and made the inevitable happen?
Yeah, I mean, the fans in Dallas, to me, they're very hypocritical. I worked down here during that period of time, from 81 to 89, and by 1988, the Cowboys fans had had enough of Landry. They were 3-13. They just wanted a change. It had been 29 years, and the team was trending down. The personnel had the quality of the personnel had diminished. But Tex Schramm wouldn't fire him. He was just hoping Tom was going to retire. And then Jerry comes in and buys the team in February of 89 and did exactly what the Cowboy fans wanted, and he got rid of Landry. The problem was that the Cowboy fans didn't want an outsider from Arkansas doing it, So all of a sudden, the same fans that were calling up the radio shows, you know, demanding Landry gets fired are the ones that showed up at his parade in downtown Dallas about a month after he got fired and had 100,000 people, you know, showing up to express their appreciation for him.
Hmm.
So Jerry was just in a bad situation there because he wanted Jimmy Johnson. And, he, you know, one of the reasons he bought the team was to have Jimmy Johnson take care of the football part. He just he had all the respect in the world for Tom Landry, but why would he want Tom Landry as his coach when he was trying to get the program going again and kind of give it a new look? So, unfortunately for Jerry, he took all the heat. But the Cowboys fans, I'm telling you, I lived through it. The Cowboys fans wanted Tom gone at that point.
Keeping with Tom, Gary, tell our listeners what would happen back in training camp at Thousand Oaks if a player actually broke curfew under Coach Landry, and is it true that they had to knock on Landry's door no matter what hour and wake him up when caught by a staffer?
Yeah, Dennis Thurman told me that story that he and Doris said, and Ron Springs went to Los Angeles one night because they were in Thousand Oaks. It was about an hour drive, and there was nothing to do in Thousand Oaks. It's a beautiful community, but for these football players who, you know, were going through 2 days and meetings and stuff, there was nothing to do at night. So after one of the assistant coaches, Jim Myers, would do the curfew, the bed check at curfew, these three guys drove to L.A. and got back at around 3 o'clock in the morning. And they didn't realize that Jim Myers would do a second bed check and caught them that they weren't there the second time around and left their notes on the door. To reduce your fine, go knock on Landry's door and tell him that you're back.
Not with no
shame game.
Yeah, so, you know, the funny part, if you can just envision this, you know, is Tom sleeping at 3 o'clock in the morning, coming to the door in his pajamas and his little sleeping cap. I made that part up. And the players have to think, sorry, Coach Landry, we broke curfew again, you know, we'll go to sleep now. We'll be at practice in the morning. And you know, Landry would just say, you know, I expect more of you guys, et cetera. And he'd go back to sleep. And then the guys who broke curfew, would, you know, they practice at 9 o'clock in the morning. And they'd be sleepwalking through practice and all their friends would be laughing at them. So it was a funny story to tell in the book.
So we're talking tonight with guest Gary Myers, who for many years was an NFL columnist on New York Daily News. He was also the Cowboys beat writer for the Dallas Morning News and has a new book entitled How About Them Cowboys. So I want to ask you about the Cowboys under Jerry Jones. There are people who say the Cowboys cannot return to the Super Bowl, cannot win another championship as long as Jerry Jones is running the team. Is that fair?
Well, I mean, it's been proven over the last 22 years. I credit the 95 Super Bowl when Barry Switzer was the coach. I give Jimmy the credit for that because it was all his players.
Yep.
So, I mean, the proof is there over the last 22 years. However, they have had some pretty good teams. In 07, they had the number one seed. I think in 2016, 2 years ago, they were the number one seed. And they lost in the divisional round at home. It's hard to blame Jerry for that. He put together the team that was good enough to be the number one seed in the NFC, and then they just didn't win those games, didn't win their first playoff game. So I think he should have a general manager. I did a whole chapter in the book on that his major failing was not bringing in a general manager, and he has no intention to. But at least in a couple instances, to say they can never reach the Super Bowl as a result of Jerry – you know, Jerry calling those shots, it's not really fair because, like I said, there were two of those years that they were the best team in the conference during the regular season and then lost really close games in the playoffs.
We're talking with Gary Myers, author of a book, How About Them Cowboys? It's a series of stories about the Cowboys from Landry to today. Want to ask you about the relationship and the roles of Stephen Jones and Jerry Jones and how they interplay in the Cowboys front office. We got about a minute. Love to get some insight into that relationship.
Yeah, Jerry really relies on Stephen. He'll defer to Stephen You know, I have a whole, I won't get into the whole story, but the whole Johnny Manziel thing in 2014, Jerry was adamant about taking Manziel, and Stephen talked him out of it because Jerry couldn't get one other person in the organization to agree to it. Stephen will, when Jerry passes or he just steps aside, each of his three children will have a third of the team, but Stephen will be, have the league vote, and he's the one, he's the only one of the three that's really involved in the day-to-day football operation. I'd like to think that Jerry learned from his father. I mean, I'm sorry, that Stephen learned from his father that he should hire a general manager.
I mean, they've certainly done well with Will McClay as a personnel guy. I mean, they've had some good drafts in the last couple of years.
Yes, they have. They need to have some more of those, and they kind of need to keep Jerry to the side when it comes to making the important personnel decisions.
All right, this is Gary Myers, and he's the author of a book, How About Them Cowboys? If you're here in Houston, Texas, he will be at a book signing this Saturday afternoon at the River Oaks Bookstore over on Westheimer and River Oaks Boulevard at the River Oaks Bookstore Saturday afternoon. Gary, tell people where can they can get the book, How About Them Cowboys? Nationally, you go to Amazon. Where is the book available?
Yeah, first of all, that book signing in Houston is at 3 p.m.
Yep.
And you can definitely get it at Amazon. It's all in all the bookstores now. It came out last Tuesday. You know, all the online services. But, the reaction to it has been really good. Jim Nance actually mentioned it during the Cowboys-Jaguars game on CBS yesterday, so that was really nice of him. And, I think, like you said at the beginning, Cowboy lovers or Cowboy haters, I think they'll really like it.
Everyone's going to love this one. How About Them Cowboys on SB Nation Radio.
This is The Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston, here's David Gow and Carla Dawson.
Carla, you love statistics.
I'm a stat girl.
Did you know that, stat girl, that one out of four batteries are going to fail this winter?
And
you
I can, did.
Well, you can get yours tested for free during Superstart Battery Month at O'Reilly's Auto Parts. If your battery needs to be replaced, O'Reilly's has the Superstart battery for you. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day.
All right, good to know.
All right, this is the moment everyone's been waiting for, the famous He Said, She Said segment, where we hear what sports luminaries have said across the globe, and we offer our own analysis and commentary. And this one
is literally across the globe, this first one.
In fact, it is, because this is Bruce Irvin, defensive end of the Raiders, and his Raiders went across the globe to play in London, where they lost ingloriously to the Seahawks. Big loss.
Hey, they put up a field goal.
And you know that sometimes after a big one, someone will say, where are you going to go? What are you going to do after the game? And they always say, well, we're going to Disney World. And there's a big celebration. Well, Bruce Irvin was asked after a devastating loss, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? And, well, we've got a little background music before I tell you what Bruce Irvin had to say. When Bruce lost, when the Raiders lost, it didn't seem that he sulked very long. He put on a little Marvin Gaye. And he said, we lost, but I've got a beautiful wife I get to go home to, boy, and I'm going to try to make some babies, man, because I'm the love machine. How about that?
What does Bruce Irvin do with the win?
Good question. Woo. I mean, this is what he does after a loss. Well, hold down the fort,
you know, we don't want to know the answer to that question.
Because his beautiful wife, he's going to go home to her, and they're going to make some babies. I mean, that's a little TMI, is it not?
It's a little TMI. But you know what? That's what happens in Raider Nation. A lot of TMI.
Well, I'm just so glad that he's able to recover.
And a lot of Raider babies. There you go.
Yeah, he's going to
recover. Because there are a lot of losses. If that's how they deal with losses, then hey, more power to
them. There's going to be a boom in the population with the Raiders record this year. Oh, all right. Thank you, Marvin Gaye. Thank you, Bruce Irvin. Thank you. Well, thank you to his wife as well. Let's go to the next one. This is Adam Case. He's the head coach of the Miami Dolphins, and he was asked why Ryan Tannehill did not play and when he would return to action, and he did not like being asked. Tannehill, of course, the quarterback, the starting quarterback, and when your starting quarterback doesn't play, it's pretty common to be asked why he wouldn't play. So let's hear what he had to say.
I'm over it. Me and him, we know that he's not right now. Okay? The details of it, we'll keep that to us. You guys don't need to know that.
So is the public entitled to know the health of your quarterback? I mean, it is interesting. Maybe you don't. I mean, in a world of HIPAA, right? Why does he have to disclose every medical detail? Las Vegas certainly wants to know.
Las Vegas wants to know, and I would think anyone who's watched Brock Osweiler any seasons before this would want to know, how long is this going to happen?
You mean the Brock star?
Brock on. See? The Brock star, yes.
Jose, what's your take on all this?
The Brock star is a pretty bad nickname.
Oh, no. Come on now. All right, well, hopefully Tannehill will be back. Dolphins really do need him to return to form. It doesn't seem like it's a serious injury.
He's got an ACL history, though, that's pretty
long. Yeah, he's had trouble staying on the field.
It's not good.
All right, let's shift gears. As I like to recount, the Cowboys put a big beat down on the Jaguars yesterday. And one guy who's been talking a lot, Jalen Ramsey, he's a guy who loves to talk before the game, during the game, after the game. He's always got a lot to say, and he never says anything nice about his opponents. But he was humbled yesterday. Cowboys really beat up on that Jaguar defense. And what did Jalen Ramsey have to say after the loss?
The shock is it that this defense comes out against their ass, considering the talent you guys have.
You guys played together a lot as a secondary. How do you kind of explain some of the blown assignments that you guys had early in this game?
Coach said that he felt like it wasn't an effort issue. It was a miscommunication issue. Would you agree with that?
Jalen, what challenge did Cole Beasley pose today?
Defense usually plays with a lot of swagger and confidence. What needs to happen to kind of get you guys mojo?
I don't know.
Hey, you got what it takes in this room to kind of regroup and get back on track?
Yeah, we'll see.
Is this still the best defense in the NFL, Jalen?
When you're playing like it.
Sounds like he was waking up in the morning.
A lot of moaning and groaning there. Not much in the way of real information.
Here's what I like about that.
Yes.
He wears his heart on his sleeve.
Fair enough.
When he talks trash, he's got equity to back it up, and he backs it up nicely.
Yep.
Obviously, this play on the field and the defense's play was trash. And so he didn't have much to say about it. So I appreciate that he's not giving lip service.
Right.
So there we go.
I will say what I found amusing is if I were one of those reporters and he's, I don't know. He didn't give any real answer. They keep coming with the questions. What do you think about Cole Beasley? What about the locker room here? What are you going to do next week? Are you still the best Jaguar defense? The reporters just kept coming. It takes a little diligence to stay the course when someone's not giving you any kind of response.
Yeah, I would have been like, well, hell, what do you know? Like, it would have been so frustrating to have to deal with that.
It was very Marshawn Lynch-ish. Remember from the Super Bowl with the Patriots? He did not want to be involved in media day, and I think he didn't even grunt. I think he just didn't speak.
Yeah, he just kept repeating, I'm just here so I don't get fined.
That's right. That's what it was.
That's an honest answer.
There we go. Honesty's a good policy. That's what Jimmy Butler says.
Oh, well, that's
over
another
and over
matter.
And over
yes.
Again.
All right, let's go to the Sunday night game, Gillette Stadium last night. I guess the problem was that the Chiefs let Brady have too much time at the end, right? Brady, with a little over 3 minutes, the Patriots moved down the field, and it was Brady to Gronkowski on that drive. Just brilliant. Patriots with the win. They win 43-40. And in the post-game celebration, Tom Brady and Gronk had a bro moment. It was a bro moment. Let's hear what it was.
Way to go, baby!
So there it is.
Aww,
Tom Brady
said,
"You
and me forever."
They're going to play forever.
We're going to play forever.
Well, I sense a little sarcasm in your voice.
A little sarcastic. That's just. It's one game.
Boy. We should have had the music, Me and You Forever, that one. Those two, they're on their way.
I'm a little disappointed neither one of you said a bromant. You said bro moment, but not bromant.
It was a bromant.
There you go.
Okay, bromant was good. I said bromance, but that's not as good as bromant. You're right, Jose.
Well, they were spectacular down the stretch yet again.
Yes, they were. And then let's not forget who never gets mentioned but is money is Gronkowski.
Yeah.
Almost Gronkowski, but not.
Yeah, if only
he's
he
the kicker,
could be. He's
Steven
thinking
Gadkowski.
About changing.
That guy is incredible.
Yeah.
And he bails, you know, that was his field goal that won it last night.
So. Well, and there you have, I mean, I can remember when Belichick let Vinatieri walk. Everybody thought, well, no, this is the greatest kicker ever, et cetera. But they found another one who's really, really good as
and
well.
And Vinatieri is still kicking his way into the record books.
Well, that's just
the
amazing
Indy.
Thing is how long he's gone. I mean, part of the logic of letting him walk was maybe he's at the tail end of his career, but his career keeps going.
Not so. Same. Right.
All right, let's shift gears to baseball, where Alex Bregman is trolling Nathan Eovaldi, the starting pitcher for the Red Sox. So Eovaldi will start game three. The series tied 1-1, and Eovaldi will start game three.
Tomorrow night, and tomorrow afternoon.
Eovaldi has a little bit of a history with the Astros. He pitched this regular season and did well for a little while until, well, there were three straight homers, Springer, Bregman, and Altuve out of the park against Eovaldi. So Bregman is reminding everybody of that moment. Let's hear what happened with Bregman.
This ball's driven deep left center field. George Springer all the way back and gone. Astros lead this game 2-1. Here's Alex Bregman. Bregman drives one to left field. This ball's going to be gone. Back-to-back jacks. Springer and Bregman. And Astros lead 3-1. This ball's crushed 3-0. Another one on the train tracks. For the second time tonight, train 27 has just left Union Station. It's been more than 10 years since the Astros have been back-to-back-to-back home runs, and they've done so tonight for a 4-1 lead.
Well, I think that's really, really nice of Eovaldi because he is a Texan. So he was giving his Southern hospitality, just leaving a few little home runs for us last
back
year.
Back-to-back-to-back home runs. You don't see that very often.
No, not at all. And that's pretty clever of Alex Bregman. I had forgotten it was Eovaldi that they did that off of.
Yep.
Clearly, Alex didn't.
You know, he did not. And, you know, it makes me nervous. I don't like that kind of trash talking when the Astros aren't in control of this series. No one's in control of this series at this moment. I mean, it's 1-1 Boston,
sure.
Houston. Here's where he has a right to speak like that. I don't like it because it puts even more of a target on our back, especially fires up Eovaldi. Bregman has got the equity to talk like that. The guy has been, I mean, he's in an MVP, American League MVP conversation to me.
Yeah.
He probably won't get it because of Mookie Betts and all, but he's right there. He's right there in that conversation.
No, well, Bregman will be a top three or four finisher on the votes for sure. Betts probably is going to win that one. But I mean, there are the Astros. They had Altuve last year in the MVP, and then this year, well, Bregman is on that short list.
He's got the swagger.
He's got the swagger, and he's showing it. Let's just hope that they can back it up, those Astros. And, I mean, it would be hard after that if Eovaldi comes in and pitches out a great game. And Eovaldi has that capacity. I mean, he has good stuff. He pitched well against the Yankees in the previous series. I think it's going to be a very, very interesting games 3 and 4 with Eovaldi and Porcello before we get cycled back to Sale and Price versus Verlander and Cole. Games 3 and 4 really are interesting matchups. All right, we've got one more. This is sort of interesting. Today marks 30 years since the famous Kirk Gibson walk-off home run in the 1988 World Series. Remember that? He was limping
out
there.
Remember that?
Well, yes, it's against the Oakland A's.
My
your
boys.
Favorite baseball team. Carla is grieving here. I
You're
do see that.
You're just taking me back and rubbing salt in the wounds here.
Well,
tonight,
let's
David.
Hear the call. Kirk Gibson in the opening game of the World Series against the Oakland A's.
And look who's coming up. 4-3 A's. 2-out, 9th inning. Not a bad opening act.
Unbelievable! A home run for Gibson, and the Dodgers have won the game 5-4. I don't believe what I just saw.
I didn't believe what I just saw either. I watched every minute of that game. That was game one. The Dodgers went on to take the A's 4-1. However, let me give prop to my Oakland boys.
Yes.
They came back to win the 89 series a year later.
Okay.
So here we go.
I remember the thing about that Gibson home run, though. He was limping, right? He came up. He was very immobile.
He had injuries to both legs.
Yes, he hit the home run. He was sort of limping around the bases. And, of course, I don't remember which came first, that hit or that great home run or the movie, The Natural. But it was sort of reminiscent, that home run and then the one that Robert Redford hit in the movie, and everybody talked about them like they were the same. It was a big moment when Kirk Gibson did that.
Well, you know what's fascinating? That he was pinch hitting in game one.
Yes.
That was his only plate appearance for the entire series.
Amazing.
And he and Dennis Eckersley are forever connected.
Well,
whether they want
most,
to be or not. But
most say that set the tone for the series because, of course, Eckersley was on the mound and Eckersley was the best closer in baseball. And it seemingly was a game that was over on behalf of the A's when you bring in the great Eck.
Absolutely.
And then Gibson changed the course of that.
But, you know, to credit Dennis Eckersley, too, who went on to have the most saves between his period of 88 to 92, right in there with that World Series, Hall of Famer, after that game, he himself fielded questions from the reporters, and he took the blame for it. He didn't try and shirk it. He didn't try and put anybody else. He took it. And even to this day, still a lot of people, he says a lot of people call him Gibson, and he said, I'm forever linked to that, but he respects Kirk Gibson. They're friendly. It's a cool thing. I've actually seen an interview with them both. It's very cool.
And it was 30 years ago.
And look at both managers, Tommy Lasorda.
Yes.
Tony La Russa.
Yeah.
I mean, can you get any better?
Two big legends.
Two big Italian legends.
All right. When we come back, we're going to recap what we learned from the legend sitting next to me, Carla Dawson.
This is The Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston, here's David Gow and Carla Dawson.
I hate to say it, but all good things must come to an end, including this show.
Darn.
But I have learned so much from you tonight.
Will you have me back next week?
Yes, please. All right. Please. Here's a little recap of some things I got from the Gloss. You think that there will not be a Pac-12 team in the college football playoff this year?
Sadly, you're spot on.
You think that Bruce Irvin's defensive end of the Raiders, who said after loss that he just wanted to go home to his wife, have fun, and make babies, has provided too much information.
And I'm nervous what he does with the win. But apparently in Oakland right now, they're not really having to worry about that.
Right, so if that's how he celebrates a loss, how does he celebrate a win? You're nervous about the Houston Rockets shifting to basketball. How their defense will shape up this year?
I am. They've lost their defensive coach as well as two key pieces and brought in a big offensive piece. So, wow.
And you think red zone offense is important for teams like the Texans and the Cardinals?
Isn't that just earth-shattering?
It was a deep insight.
I think I'm a trendsetter now.
You're amazing.
It shouldn't be that difficult, don't you think?
All right, coming up next is Adam Gold. He hosts the Gold Standard. You definitely want to hear him. And by the way, the Brewers are now leading the Dodgers 4-0 in the top of the seventh. And the 49ers are beating
the Packers 24-20 at the half.
24-20. Adam Gold coming up next. The Gold Standard on SB Nation Radio.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.